But if Fort Ticonderoga was such a formidable fort, how was it that the Brits were able to drive them from it in 1759?
Good question, Marshall. In 1759, the British unveiled a grand strategy to lead a two-pronged attack, one up the Champlain Valley and the other against Quebec. British naval superiority prevented the French from being reinforced, and after a three-month siege, Fort Ticonderoga was finally toppled.
Did it fall, or was it abandoned like Crown Point?
It was abandoned like Crown Point. When the French abandoned the fort, they blew up the munitions, which left Ticonderoga in ruins. The Brits repaired it, but it was a shadow of its former self.
If the Brits repaired Fort Ticonderoga, how is it that Ethan Allen and Benedict Arnold were able to take it so easily in 1775?
Just like in Crown Point, only a skeletal crew was left to protect Fort Ticonderoga, so it was sort of a pushover. But to make Fort Ticonderoga defensible, the rebels needed to overcome more fatal flaws.
Okay, what was fatal flaw number one?
The fort was vulnerable to an attack from the north. In the French and Indian War, the French had constructed it, oriented to the south to protect from a British invasion.
Oh, and in this war, Burgoyne is coming from the north, so what did they do about that?
The year before Burgoyne's arrival, the fort was visited by several engineers.
Really? Engineers?
The engineers are key, as you will see. Ah, rhymed it. They inspected a rocky bluff on the east side of the lake that had a better view to the north and determined that position to be more defensible than the old fort. In 1776, when the men had just started construction of that new fort with a bridge connecting the two, word arrived that a momentous proclamation had been signed by the Continental Congress.
You mean the Declaration of Independence?
Right. They christened the new defensive position Fort Independence.
The rebels were getting serious. Great Britain, we defy you. Any more flaws?
Indeed, there are. The engineers that inspected Fort Ticonderoga and saw to the construction of the updated works came up with an interesting idea. They were convinced that guns positioned at the top of Mount Defiance, a height to the southwest of Fort Ticonderoga, could reach both forts.
So how did they test their theory?
Here was the experiment. To see if it was possible to haul a cannon to the top of the mountain, they ran to the top of the hill and agreed that it could be done.
It says here that Benedict Arnold was one of the guys that ran up the hill, and just months after, he was shot in the leg in Quebec.
Indeed he was, Marshall. Next, they fired a cannon from both forts to see if the shells landed close enough to the top to suggest that the forts were in range. And in both cases, the theory was proven correct.
So what did they do about it?
Nothing.
What? So both forts, Ticonderoga and Independence, are vulnerable to attack from Mount Defiance, which could leave the rebels exposed.
Right.
This is a pretty big flaw. Are there any others?
The man in charge at Fort Ticonderoga had just arrived. Major General Arthur St. Clair had assurances from the Continental Congress that the British troops in Canada would be moved to New York City along the Atlantic coast to join General Howe, and that there was no imminent threat of an attack on Ticonderoga. St. Clair was so convinced that he brought his son with him. He is just a little younger than you are, Marshall.
So clearly they were not ready for attack.
The garrison only had somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 men. This was far short of the 10,000 men needed to secure the post.
Yeah, that's how many there were when Carleton headed back to Canada, right? 10,000 men protecting the fort?
Those men that had been there to oppose Carleton the previous fall went home during the winter. Just a few days after St. Clair and his son arrived, he received news from two captives that Burgoyne was on his way to Fort Ticonderoga. Here's what St. Clair wrote to his commanding officer, Schuyler.
General Burgoyne has arrived in Canada. The British Army is assembling as fast as possible at St. John's. That the light infantry, which they call the Flying Army, commanded by General Fraser, is already advanced to Pointe aux Fers. That the whole army is said to consist of about 10,000 men. We may depend on their being here in a fortnight at farthest. If the enemy intends to attack us, I assure you, sir, we are very ill prepared to receive them.
Wow, and meanwhile, Burgoyne is preparing for the biggest challenge of his career, overtaking Fort Ticonderoga and 10,000 men.
All the same, Burgoyne's got a strong strategy, an ancient military tactic known as a pincer movement. The idea was to split the army into three columns, so that the right and left wings circle around while the center advances. If successful, then you would have completely encircled your enemy.
Pincer? So like the pinch?
Exactly. But it was a difficult maneuver to employ because the enemy could retreat before the right and left wings encircled them, allowing their escape. If Burgoyne could succeed in getting his troops around the rear to cut off the escape between Ticonderoga and Lake George, and the road connecting Fort Independence to Castleton in Vermont, and the water route up Lake Champlain to Whitehall, then he could force the whole army to surrender.
Okay, so what happens next?
Burgoyne's armada was anchored 3 miles above Fort Ticonderoga, where he could observe the rebels' movements. Here's where we meet British Lieutenant William Digby. He was close to Burgoyne and provided a lot of day-to-day accounts and official correspondences.
Was he a diarist like Wasmus?
No, he was more of a memoirist. He wrote his story after he got home. From memory, perhaps revisionist history, but his accounting nonetheless. Here is what Digby had to say.
We had a full view from our post of their works lines and their flag of liberty displayed on the summit of the fort. Our gunboats were anchored across the river, out of the range of their cannon. With our glasses, we could distinguish everything. They were about in the fort, appearing very busy about their works and viewing with their glasses our situation forces. It was entertaining enough, being a scene of life I had not been accustomed to before, and its novelty made it amusing.
So we employed the pincer movement. Burgoyne sent Riedesel down the east shore in Vermont, while Burgoyne sailed his Grand Armada through the center of the lake. The route we are on now is the one taken by Fraser and the artillerist Phillips on the west side of the lake, which was intended to cut off the rebel line of retreat to Lake George. Up ahead is Mount Hope, where Benedict Arnold constructed a star-shaped fortification, which was intended to protect the route between the two lakes. From that vantage point, when there were no trees there, you could see 360 degrees. It was a critical point of defense. We will make a quick stop at the top of Mount Hope. It is now a cemetery, but still has the remains of the fortification foundation. Then head into Ticonderoga.